Hey everyone, welcome to the Small Screen Couch Commentary Podcast, where we watch your favorite TV shows, give you our thoughts, and ask for yours. I'm Alex.
And I'm Billy. We're excited to watch and rewatch the best TV shows from start to finish and hope you're ready to take the ride along with us.
We'll talk about the best characters and their stories, reveal some hidden gems, and look for you to do the same.
From sci-fi to comedy, drama to anime, we've got it all covered. So grab your favorite snack and we'll see you on the couch.
All right, everybody, welcome to Season 3, Episode 2 of Small Screen Couch Commentary, The Boys.
The Boys.
So we had mentioned in the last episode that, you know, things started off with a bang, ended with a bang. And this episode, a little bit more of like some setup of things.
Yeah, but you know what?
Still good episode.
I really enjoyed this episode.
Yeah. So, first things first, jumping right into it, what were you snacking on in this episode?
Chicken nuggets.
Okay. Store-bought? McDonald's?
Store-bought.
Okay. Yeah.
Nice. So, if you remember last episode, I had pizza rolls.
Yes.
Well, I watched episode 2 not too long after episode 1, and I was still hungry because I only had a few pizza rolls. I got two kids. So I'm like, you guys have most of them. So, I had some chicken nuggets right after.
Not a bad choice.
Yeah.
Not a bad choice. So I was actually getting down on some Oreo cookies, specifically
double stuff.
Yes.
Which is normal stuff.
Yes. But specifically golden Oreos.
You know, I barely ever have golden Oreos, but when you have golden Oreos, aren't you happy?
Yeah. I don't get them that often.
Yeah.
It's a once in a while type thing, but you know, it's a nice change of pace. Like, don't get me wrong. Regular chocolate Oreos, top tier.
Yeah.
Golden Oreos, next, you know, a step down.
Sometimes,
but
you need them.
Yeah. You know, palate cleanser, if you will.
Yeah.
You know,
we'll go with that.
But yeah, so really enjoyed those. Rating for this episode, where'd you go?
You ready?
Uh-oh.
No change. 8.5 from last episode.
Okay.
I really, really enjoyed this one.
I went down slightly. I went 8.3.
Oh, so not too
much. I went 8.3.
Yeah. No. 8.4 last episode, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. And not, you know what's funny?
Talk to me.
I don't know if just in my old age I've gotten soft or if stuff really just is that good. I feel like I feel like I used to be a much harsher critic than I am. With everything, with movies, TV, music, art, like if I didn't like something, I let it be known.
Yeah, but I think you were nitpicky back in the day. You're a bit of a hater, I would say.
Whoa.
Yeah, I think you were. I think you were a bit of a hater.
I don't know if I would ascend to those heights. Hater is strong language.
Oh, man. You did pick a lot. I do feel like I was surprised, specifically with our Avatar podcast, which we don't have to roll in too deep. You were very generous, and you were able to let go of some things. And I do know old Alex or younger Alex wouldn't have let go of some of those things.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Maybe it's maturing. Maybe it's not becoming soft.
Some people will call that growth. Yeah. I don't know.
You ever know the people that say instead of mature, they go mature? I don't like it.
I don't like it either. I also don't like the word maturation. Like sometimes
that's a word.
Yeah.
Like from maturing?
It's the process of maturing. Yeah.
No, I don't like it. I don't want to say.
Maturation?
Maturation doesn't sound good.
Yeah, I don't like it either. I don't like it either.
What about maturation?
No. I don't like any of it.
What about maturation?
Like, I remember one time I was having a conversation with somebody about an athlete, and they were saying how, like, from college to the pros, that there was a lot of maturation. And, like, from that point, I was like, hate that word.
Yeah.
Hate that word.
Same thing. Like mature, one of my favorite teams, their coach would always talk about how the team's maturing and they would say maturing. And I hate that.
No. Yeah. Can't have it.
Moving on. This show is about the boys, not about the word mature.
But yeah, there's a lot of stuff that happens in this episode too. Episode 1 was jam packed. A lot of different arcs happening there. Very much the same here. A lot of different arcs happening all over the place. And there's just so much more depth to a show like this than I thought there would be. You think of a superhero show, you think of, you know, excuse me, something that's based on like a comic or whatever. You don't think there's going to be a lot of layers. You don't think there's going to be a lot of, you know, deep content, but
Yeah, you almost, if you watch a superhero show or movie, you watch the parts that build up because they're getting ready to build to a big fight or something like that. And most of the time, there's not a lot of fighting in this show. It's some bloody stuff that happens.
Sure.
And some shocker value, but there's a lot more character development, a lot more depth to the characters.
Well, and it's funny because, you know, you think of, say, maybe like a Marvel movie or a DC movie, or even some of their animated stuff. You're absolutely right in that, like, the plot is basically just pushing its way along to get to a fight. There's not really a ton of developing of characters, certainly not in any of the Marvel movies. You get a little bit more character development in some DC stuff, but not really a ton. I will say this, as far as the Marvel animated and DC animated stuff, sometimes worlds better than the live action stuff. You get a little bit more development there. But regardless, I don't think there's ever been a superhero related show that I've seen that has as much development than this. You know what I will say there might be a little bit of development in?
Talk.
Smallville.
Yeah, okay, I can see it.
Like, if I'm thinking back on superhero TV shows,
because there wasn't much action in Smallville.
No, yeah, there was a lot of development in Smallville.
You had to.
Shout out Tom Welling and Michael Rosenbaum.
Oh, Kristen Crook, too.
Yes.
Sorry.
Of course, of course.
But they have their podcast where they rewatch Smallville, and that's amazing.
Yeah. Well, and Michael Rosenbaum has, I think, like two or three different podcasts.
Yeah. What a great thing for him to do. I like him, so it's kind of cool to.
Yeah. But yeah, again, The Boys, I am always, and maybe by this point I shouldn't be, three seasons in, I'm always surprised at how deep the show can get, how much there is to each character and their individual storylines, and then also how everything weaves together and comes back. It's not like they've got all these different branches that kind of sometimes just don't go anywhere.
Right.
Like, it all comes back, and the things happen for a reason. They make sense, and the way that they even portray the different themes, it's done very, very well.
I think that's one thing. I think what surprises me the most is you have like this wild show where like you're waiting for the next wild moment or like a funny moment. There's a lot of comedy, but still you don't feel like they're off track with what kind of show they are. Like, you know, when it's time to be deep, they're deep.
Yes.
But you're also not like, oh, that comedy part really took me out of the show. It never does that.
They don't get lost in the sauce, and they're not really losing their identity.
Right.
They know what kind of show they are. They understand the audience. Yeah. But then I think more importantly than all of that, they really know that the way that they are making the story happen, that they have to be very careful with a lot of stuff, with the different things like the I don't know what the term I'm want to look for. It's like the feminism part of the show. It's not something like a Captain Marvel where it's like, okay, like I am woman, like I'm getting, you know, I don't even want to bash Captain Marvel because the first one I actually really
liked. I really enjoyed the last one too.
And the second one, it wasn't bad either. But I also feel like the, hey, I am woman type thing is a little too much or too over the top there. Whereas in this show, they don't do that. It's more along the lines of like,
it feels organic. Like we said last season, it feels like, hey, we are, you know, women are powerful.
Right.
We're going to show you that, but we're not going to force feed it to you. We're going to just show you.
Or even the things around race and equality.
Which I'll tell you what, this conversation is perfect for this episode. There's a point where we see some stuff where it's like, this episode makes fun of the real world and how we don't really care about some people don't really care about the equality of others. They just want to pretend like they do. And then you have other people who actually do care.
Yeah.
You know, and I think this episode really makes fun of the real world in that way. And it kind of is good for this conversation we're having now.
Yeah. Just everything that the way they tell the stories here is really good.
Yeah.
So let's just jump right into things.
Sorry, we got real deep there, guys.
We did. Didn't mean to.
We got deeper. We can't talk to dolphins and fish, though.
No. I don't think I would want to.
You know what? I 100% want to talk to dolphins and
fish. Yeah, but you're an animal guy. I'm not.
I am an animal. Yeah, let's go ahead. We're going to start off. There's a lot of different paths, like you said. I think we go with, let's start with Homelander's story. with his birthday and pretty much everything Homelander.
Yeah.
Let's have some fun with the guy.
Let's do it. So Homelander, you know, from the first episode, we realize he's down in the dumps. Everyone's tense around him. He kind of even goes off the edge a little bit when he's talking with A-Train last episode.
Yeah.
And this episode is not much different. Everyone is still walking on eggshells when they're around him. Everyone is kind of very tense because they don't know, like, are we going to get cool, calm, collected Homelander who's just gritting his teeth but still doing his job? Are we going to get Homelander that is going to yell at everyone? Yeah, that's going to laser beam everyone. What's going to happen here?
You get one of your meme.
I do. I do. Yeah. So Homelander in this episode, he is trying to plan his birthday. And it's always, you know, prior to now, been a really big deal. Like, Vought does a whole big celebration.
He even mentions, like, there's a commercial for it, and it's on Vought Telemundo, Vought this, Vought, all these different channels for Vought.
Yeah. So it's a huge deal and has been for a long time. But we're kind of slowly realizing here as the episode goes on that at this point, because of everything that's happening, the person who cares about it the most really is just Homelander.
Yeah.
And not a lot of other people are as invested in it as they used to be.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the question that Homelander kept getting in the first episode is, how didn't you know you were dating a Nazi?
Yeah.
Which he did.
He knew.
But, you know,
but it worked out to his advantage.
Yeah. He's still having to try and save face.
Yeah. So this episode, it's kind of cool to see. He thinks he's going to pull off another Homelander stunt that he has the past two seasons and doesn't get away with it. So we'll start with that. We're over at the whatever theater we're at. He's in there doing a practice run. And Starlight's co-hosting it because she's now a co-captain.
Correct.
So she's going through her scripts real quick, and she wants to be in and out. She's like, I don't have a lot of words. I just want to do this and get out of here. So she starts going through her script, and at one point she wants to bring up, she goes, and I'm something really dear and close to my heart, which is going to be her charity. But she goes, wait, what's this?
Yeah, someone changed the script on her.
Yeah, I wonder who it could be. So apparently she is going to sing Homelander happy birthday. And so she's like, what the fuck? And she kind of gives in and she's like, all right, friend, happy birthday to you. And Homelander stops and he does his Homelander thing where he like gets a smile. And he's like, oh, hold on. I want a little more character into it. I want more.
Marilyn Monroe.
Just got done deep throating
JFK
type of vibe. And she's like, what the fuck? He goes, well, it's supposed to go with the vibe of the show. Here, I'll show you. And then he shows, this is how he's trying to resexualize Starlight because I know it pisses her off. All these girls in really skimpy Starlight outfits.
Yeah, her old costume.
Come out.
Or, well, her old new costume.
Yeah. They're coming out in real skimpy outfits, and they're supposed to dance in a sexual way at a happy birthday.
Right.
And obviously Starlight's not in for it. So there's a little bit back and forth and everything, and Homefront's like, Homelander's like, you're doing it. And then over the speaker, you hear Mr. Edgar, if she doesn't want to sing you happy birthday, then she doesn't have to sing you happy birthday.
Yeah. Saves the day for Starlight.
Well, I want to mention, too, Homelander goes, well, if I walk, what happens then? And this is in front of some people on the crew and, like, other stuff. And Mr. Edgar goes, based on your recent numbers, I think I'd be okay with that. And I was like, God damn. Like, got him.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, throughout seasons 1 and 2, Homelander was their biggest IP, their biggest success. Even throughout season 2, when Homelander was, you know, in sticky situations, he still was their number one guy.
Yeah.
Like, without a doubt. And so now it's at a tipping point here where Vought and Mr. Edgar are basically like, hey, look, like, we don't really need you anymore. So I think it's partly that they don't actually need them, but then also partly that Mr. Edgar's kind of just like, the whole superhero division I want to be done with anyway, so
yeah.
It doesn't really matter. But to Homelander, to every other soup that was in the Seven or, you know, that was a big superhero, it was really just about the money.
Yeah.
You know, this
and
is my paycheck.
The love of the
right.
people, yeah.
Right. But for Homelander, it's always just been about the love of the people.
Yeah.
And he doesn't really have as much of that as he did. He still does have supporters out there, But he's not the number one guy anymore. As we saw from the last episode, Starlight's the number one person. Her ratings are higher than anyone else has ever been. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people out there that don't really like Homelander anymore. So the fact that he's trying to still be relevant and make his birthday happen is something that he really thinks is important. He also is at this point, too, where he's realizing maybe this isn't a big deal anymore. And I think that's saddening him.
Yeah. Well, he also, like, in the scene, you see his power is gone. Like, he used to be able to say anything for even to Vought and it go his way. So, yeah, he's just losing his cool. At this point, and again, I feel bad. I don't remember the guy who's trying to get in the Seven from the reality TV show. But he's there, too, because he's going to put on a show of a song from when he was 16. So you got your license to drive. And even he's like, I don't want to do this. I sound like a freaking child molester.
Yeah, well, because the lyrics to the song are like...
of her being 16.
Yeah, and he's a grown man now, you know, in his mid to late 20s. So it's a little awkward.
Yeah.
But this is all in, like, part of the celebration that is going to be... So it's really like a Vought celebration, but then the main... reason
is Homelander.
It's Homelander's birthday.
Yeah, and the thing is, Starlight has already told him, like, hey, then don't. Make waves. It's okay. And so after, like, this huge argument between Homelander and Starlight, she walks to the side, and he goes, Annie, what the heck was that? And she's like, I'm making waves. And so she's trying to show him, hey, you can be good and do what you think is the right thing and still be part of Vought. You don't have to, like, fall into line, basically, for Vought. Because he wants to be in the Seven really bad. Even when he meets... Homelander, he like is real like, oh my god, it's an honor.
Yeah,
and I flash back to the blind dude where Homelander just smacks his head.
Oh
shut.
My gosh, I forgot about that.
But Homelander makes a racist comment, and also like mentions how they used to have sex and stuff like that. So it's easy for him to get the Seven. But he says something like when she was chewing on your burrito, and it's like
no.
What did he say?
Chorizo.
Oh yeah, sorry. And it's like. It was just such a silence, awkward moment. Like, it was really weird. But it still shows, like, Homelander might not be a Nazi.
But he's still a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. He's, he's a racist, for sure. But he's also one of those people that's like...
You know what he is? He's like, I'm not racist. I have black friends.
Yes. That's exactly what I was going to say. That's exactly what I was going to say. Or he's going to be like the person that's like, I'm not racist, but, you know, he's one of those type people.
Yeah.
Like, if you're one of those people that has to say, I'm not racist, but you're probably racist.
Yeah.
You know,
for sure.
Homelander's trying to make this party happen. Nobody else is really wanting to go through with what he wants for this celebration.
Yeah.
But Homelander's trying his damnedest to get this party off the ground the way he wants it to be.
Yeah. So before the party goes on, he has apparently an annual birthday save.
Yeah.
And so we flash to this at some point in the episode, and there's a girl getting ready to jump off a building. And Homelander shows up, but he's back on the building. So I don't think anybody else knows he's there yet.
No, I think
they know
he's
going to be there.
Yeah, they know he's going to be there, but I don't know. You're right. They don't know that he's there yet.
Yeah,
because like there's Vought camera crews there. Ashley is there, and she's telling the camera crew
he could come down at any moment.
Yeah, zoom in and get her right on the edge of the building there. He's on top of the building talking to her,
and he says, "Congratulations, you're my annual birthday save. Do you really want to be damned forever in hell for jumping off this building? Like, you know, da da da." He goes through this whole spiel.
Yeah, trying to like convince her not to jump, but he's really not putting much effort into it.
No, because he even says to her, like, if you jump, I'm just going to catch you anyway. So, like, pull back. And at this moment, you get a flash to Ashley looking at her phone, and she goes, oh, fuck. And I'm like, I remember the first time watching this episode.
Yeah, I didn't know what she was freaking out about.
Yeah, but there's a big-ass screen on a building behind a Homelander, and he turns around and looks at it, and the news banner on the ticker says... Stormfront commits suicide, leaked footage, and she's being dragged out of Vought Tower in a body bag. So we remember she's super upset because Homelander really isn't a Nazi.
Yeah.
That pisses her off, and pretty much you can see like the love there, too, is kind of fading. So last time we saw her, she was crying. And, so finds out that she actually bit her tongue to kill herself, too, which is crazy.
Yeah.
So she
bit her tongue off so she could... drown in her own blood in her mouth and choke on it.
That's
whatever.
Crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he sees this. So all of a sudden his mood just changes. And he vents to this girl. I think her name's like Chelsea or something like that. Vents to her. You know, you do all this stuff. People don't love you, blah, blah, blah. Now the love of my life is dead, and goes through this whole thing. He goes, you know what? Fucking jump. And she's like, she starts getting scared. She's like, you know, I don't
actually want to jump.
And he's like, come on, where's your follow through?
Yeah. So fucked up.
Oh,
but
my God. And he's like, look, either you do it, or I'm going to push you off that ledge. Or no, he starts to glow his eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's just like, I'm not asking you anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, as everyone down on the ground is being surprised by this news that Stormfront has killed herself, then all of a sudden you just see something fly down and splat, a bunch of blood goes everywhere. And I don't know if they ever like actually show or reveal what happened, but either she jumped or she got pushed off.
Yeah, we don't know which one it was, but I'm assuming she jumped. Laser eyed.
Yeah. You know what, though? I probably would have rather taken the laser eye.
I think it's more instant, right? Plus, you're not.
I would think so.
As you're jumping, you're seeing death come to you.
Yeah, I probably would have rather gotten.
I probably would beg for my life. I'm like, look, whatever happened to you sucks, man. You know what I mean? I'm sorry. Let me live.
Yeah,
I will tell the world how great you are.
Right.
You know what I mean? But yeah, either way, so he goes through that. He's now down in the dump, so he's not in a good mood
at all,
whatsoever.
Yeah.
So then, I think we can flash back to the birthday celebration.
So
we have the song, So You Got Your License to Drive, being going on stage. And it is a really bad teeny bopper song.
Yeah, not good at all.
Yeah, and then he does say, as he's singing, he goes, you're 16. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah, it's a little awkward.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's part of the celebration. And then,
A-Train comes on stage in a different suit, which we will talk about a little bit later.
Yeah, but different suit. We're not going to touch on what it was different about it.
Yeah, we'll hit that then. But when he walks off stage, he introduces Homelander and Starlight.
Yeah, as co-captains.
As co-captains, because she did agree to become co-captain.
Yeah. She was hesitant about it before, but I think then when she realized, okay, maybe I could actually do some good here, then she accepts the job. And I do want to just talk about that real quick.
Yeah.
Because you often see this particular theme happen in other formats and other shows and other movies and stuff, where it's like, okay, there's a corrupt system out there. I'm going to go and change the system from within.
Yeah.
And more often than not, that doesn't end up happening. Like, the corrupt system ends up winning.
Yeah.
Clearly, you've watched this season. I haven't.
But yeah, money always wins, man.
Do you, the first time you watched it, did you think, okay, Starlight actually could change things?
No.
I thought the same thing here. I'm like, Starlight, you're doing this for good reasons, but I don't know if you're seeing the big picture here. Vought is only allowing you to be co-captain because they have ulterior motives. Like,
yeah, there's always some ulterior motive.
You were put in that position for a reason. And yes, you might be able to do some good, but you're not going to turn Vought into this like good company.
No,
it's not going to happen.
No way. But I do want to also mention when Homelander gets off and A-Train's like, happy birthday, buddy. He's like, Homelander says, thank you. And he's like, get off my stage, Tubby.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's being
still making fun of him for, you know, gaining weight or whatever. And you know what? I don't even think you could tell that he's gained any weight.
No.
Does he even look like he gained weight?
I think
it's just Homelander being a dick.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
So,
but anyway,
he's just being a shitty person. So he gets on stage with Stormfront. So Stormfront, Starlight is announcing like everything, saying, you know, I'm happy to be here with my co-captain, my mentor. She kind of pauses.
Yeah.
To say
she's gritting her teeth here as well. Yeah. Saying that.
But then she's able to say, hey, like, but I get to announce something really near and dear to my heart. It's a charity thing. And while she's making this announcement about charity, some guy in the stands goes, hey, Homelander.
Your Nazi's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he kind of like, I read something about this episode, and I'm sorry I shouldn't say the article, but it's almost like a glitch in his smile. That happens. Like, it kind of goes away and then comes back for a second.
Well, yeah, because Homelander, obviously, you know, the entire time throughout the show, any time where he's being good, anytime he's in the public eye, anytime he's in front of the camera, 100% fake.
Yeah.
But you can especially see in episodes 1 and 2 here, when they see him, when you see him on camera, his smile is like extra, extra fake. You know, because he's
it's barely there.
Yeah, he well, and the thing is, he's only doing these things because he has to. He doesn't want to be doing any of the stuff that he's doing.
But when do you think was the last time he was heckled? You know what I mean? Like, he probably doesn't remember.
I don't think I've ever seen him heckled on
right.
the show.
So this is like a moment for him where it's like,
yeah,
what the hell?
Could
you
so,
imagine if that guy? If he, I would just laser him, you know what I mean?
Well, so I think clearly the public still doesn't really know how bad of a person Homelander is. They have an idea, and obviously, you know, the people that are against the Nazi situation that happened, they probably also have an inkling that, like, yeah, Homelander's saying he didn't know, but he probably did. And one of the things actually we forgot to mention, I think either in, not sure if it was last episode or beginning of this one, there is like a faction of people out there, regular people, that are in support of Stormfront still.
Yeah.
And like
saying
pro-Nazi stuff.
Yeah, I forget what they said. They're like Stormfronters or...
Yeah, I think that is their name, something like that.
So,
but anyway, so after this guy says that, Homelander
he's starting to lose his cool.
Yeah.
But
and Starlight is like, let me try and salvage this situation here.
Yeah.
You know, because she's going back then and trying to say like, hey, Homelander is making a big donation to, you know, my charity, and, you know, he's a good guy, but look, like, he's human. He's just like the rest of you, you know.
Ooh.
This is then where Homelander just goes off the rails.
Yeah.
And it also is a meme
this
that was
your
pretty...
meme that you didn't know was what connected to in the show.
Yeah. Right. There's a meme from this particular scene that was huge on TikTok. You know, when the show had premiered, it was what, like a year or two ago,
yeah.
It's probably like a year and a half ago, something like that. But in any case, Homelander just goes on a rant.
Yeah, pretty much saying, I'm not human. I'm not like you. I'm better. And this is where you get the meme.
Yeah.
You should be thinking, Christ, that I am, and I am who and what I am.
Yeah, and the meme that was on TikTok that was a huge viral sound was him saying, I am better. I am better. So, yeah, he just basically shows his cards here a little bit. Not quite 100% like full blown, like, hey, I'm a horrible person, but basically telling everybody, like, you're not the hero. I think he even says, you're not the real heroes, which was like his tagline that he would always say. He's like, you're the real heroes. And he's basically saying, like,
no,
you know, I'm the real hero.
The big thing to take from this scene is he's speaking out here. He's like, if they lied to me, meaning they could be lying to you.
Right.
And you get people watching on TV, one of them being MM's daughter's stepdad.
I don't know if he's stepdad yet. Are they married? But
that guy.
Okay.
The nerdy white guy that
is
taking over MM's job. And now he's into it.
Yeah. Now, I do want to get to that point at some point as well. But yeah, he's watching the screen and he's like kind of agreeing with Homelander. Like, he doesn't say anything, but you see the look on his face.
Yeah.
Because this celebration is televised on all the, you know, the VOT stations.
Yeah, which just again kind of mirrors real life in a little bit. And it's like,
absolutely. It's crazy to see how much there are similarities between events that are happening on the show and events that were kind of happening in real life at the time. Because it's just like, you can see how easy it is for a regular person to kind of get brainwashed a bit by someone because they're so charismatic, because they're
being so extreme about something.
Homelander, you know, basically tells people, like, you guys ain't shit. I'm, you know, basically like a god here. And
He even tells Chelsea, the girl who killed himself, when he's talking to her, she's like, oh, my God. And he says, no God. The only man in the sky is me,
right,
which is the name of the episode, The Only Man in the Sky. But he even says, like, I am a god. They, you know, why they tear down their gods.
Right.
He's broken, and he's said some things that are on his mind.
Yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see moving forward how people react to this and where things go with Homelander, because it's like, he's fallen, you know, in the ratings. He's no longer Vaught's number one guy, and now this is probably only going to further, like, make him not their guy anymore.
Right, but it kind of goes rewinds to what Stormfront said in the second season. You don't need everybody.
That's true.
And so now, because of this, you're going to see, again, he's might not have 100% of the population loving him, but he's going to have loyal soldiers to him.
Right.
You know? Kind of, yeah. So it's scary to think about.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. But that's pretty much everything that happens with Homelander's birthday party for the most part.
Yeah. Let's jump into two side stories here.
Let's do it.
Let's hit up the Deep real quick because it's quick and easy. There's a commercial for his show that's going to be on like a VH1 type of channel or something, like his movie.
Yeah.
And it's about his, it's the same as his book Deeper. And I can't remember the guy who's playing,
it's Billy Zane.
Yeah, Billy Zane's playing the
Billy Zane
character.
Is playing Alistair.
Alistair, yeah.
Which we know he's dead because...
which they do mention they don't know where he's at when they
interview
him.
But essentially, the Deep and his wife, is it...
Cassandra,
they've escaped the church. And so...
Wow, they're so brave.
Yeah, so his whole book and his movie is essentially... the story of them having been entrapped in this cult and then them leaving the cult.
Yeah, which is dangerous, right? And even at one point, you get the scene from when A-Train got his job back. And this one now is different. The Deeper is like, hey, something's not right here. Something doesn't seem safe for the church. And Alistair, Billy Zane, just says, you know what? You're being a real toxic person right now. You leave. And he goes, I'm not leaving. Not without, and then it stops or something like that. And it's like, not without my dolphin is the name.
That's the name of the movie, Not Without My Dolphin, which I'm assuming his dolphin is Cassandra.
I would assume.
Yeah.
But he's really playing into this and doing a great job because he's probably making bank right now. And
yeah, he's kind of at a point now where he's not back in the Seven, obviously, but he's doing well enough.
That popularity is the same.
Right,
maybe
right.
Better.
Yeah, and so he still wants to get into the Seven, and he still wants to be, you know, back at the same station that he was when he was in the Seven and pre, you know, Starlight and whatever. But I'm wondering here, like, does he really need the Seven at this point?
I don't think so.
You know? And I'm wondering, too...
because you don't have to worry about being around freaking Homelander.
True, and, well, that's the thing. Because he's not part of the Seven, he's not around to see... how tense things are around him. He obviously got a taste of it in the last episode when he was on that you know
show
where he had the slot before him. But yeah, I wonder here, is the Deep going to have kind of like a more prominent role here moving forward? Because throughout season one, he had a small-ish role. Same thing through season two. But then now I'm kind of getting the sense like, okay, he's going to have a bigger role here moving forward. I think there's going to be some event that happens that kind of brings him back into the spotlight. Maybe. I don't know. That's just my prediction.
I don't know about that, but there is an event that happens with the Deep this season, and it's another one of those scenes where it's like, I might fast forward.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Can't wait for that.
He has the most awkward scenes.
He does. He does.
And it gets really weird this season. Not really weird. I don't know. You wait.
Okay. Okay.
But yeah, so that's pretty much all we get for the Deep, you know, here. I really want to actually jump into A-Train's side story because it's not doesn't take up much of the episode.
Yeah. And they're kind of in similar situations. Like, A-Train's not really in the Seven, but he's not fully out either.
Yeah.
Because he got brought back in.
But he's not doing anything.
But yeah, he's not. He's in the Seven, but he's not going out and stopping crime. He was involved in the Dawn of the Seven movie. He came back. But aside from that, he's kind of just there.
Yeah.
And so A-Train is also trying to find his path and trying to reinvigorate his career as well.
Yeah. So he's pitching to Ashley with Seth, one of the PR guys. No.
Yes.
One of the
marketing guys. Yeah.
And you can tell Seth does not want to be here.
Nah, not at all.
Because A-Train decides to sell. In fact, hey, I know I'm not running and doing races, but I'm more than just the fastest man alive.
Right.
I'm like, well, what else are you? He's like, I'm a proud African-American, which you kind of haven't gotten any of that vibe from him throughout the first two seasons, that he really doesn't care about the culture, the people, whatever.
Right.
And so he starts to put his sales pitch on.
Yeah, he has like a presentation with Seth. Yeah, it's not a great pitch. I think it had like maybe some good intention, but it wasn't really well put together, and it wasn't anything that like if you were watching it would sell you on wanting to go through with his idea of how he can rejuvenate his career. And like one of the things that he wants to do is create a new costume. And he even says like, oh, and you know, I can use it for the celebration tonight at Homelander's birthday. And Ashley immediately shoots that down. It's like, yeah, you know, great ideas, but we'll talk about it some other time.
Yes, he pitches a TV show where he goes back to Africa for 12 episodes.
Right.
And just kind of, I guess, looks for his roots or whatever. But then he makes the comment, just like in Roots. And it's like,
yeah.
Okay, dude.
Roots, you most of you probably have never seen Roots. Roots came out like when we were kids.
Yeah.
And it was a very powerful movie about a character named Kunta Kinte.
Based on a book.
Yeah.
But like it's real events.
Yeah. But just a very powerful movie about someone who, you know...
Went through slavery.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, him referencing that and, like, you know, trying to get back in touch with his heritage and whatever, he sees it as a good opportunity and something that he can do for the culture, and Ashley just is not on board with it.
I feel like he doesn't think it's actually something he can do for the culture. It's just for himself.
Well, yes.
Right.
Yes.
He's pretending it's for that because he just wants to get himself back out in the limelight.
Right.
I think that's where the problem with this for him is, right? Like the scene, because even Seth kind of tells him later, you know, you're not really doing this. Everyone can tell it's fake.
Right.
Even he's like,
it's very forced.
Yeah. Because the next thing he wants to make is a video game.
Yeah.
About the slave trade.
Yeah. Not,
not a good
not
idea.
Not a good idea.
So. Yeah, and then he brings up the suit, and Ashley's like, no, but we still find out that he does it anyway.
Yeah.
And it's like the it's African-colored flag around him, basically.
Yeah, it's very African-themed. It's no longer the blue, you know, speedster-type costume. It's got red and green and brown, and, you know.
I'm gonna be honest with you, it does look kind of cool, though.
I didn't mind it. I didn't mind it. Yeah. I don't know that I would associate it with like someone who's like a speedster. I would certainly associate it more with someone who's like an African hero of some sort.
Yeah.
And like that's obviously what he was going for. But yeah, A-Train, he's
lost.
Very much so.
Yeah.
He's lost in the sauce. He's getting spun here, just trying to figure out, you know, how he can get back to the station that he was. It's him and the Deeper on kind of like the same track, or there are two trains going along like
parallel.
The same, you know, yeah, parallel tracks here.
One's and, in the seven, one's not, but they're doing like the same thing, trying to find, but.
And neither of them are having like a ton of success. Like obviously A-Train's in the seven, but he's not really doing anything. The Deep is not in the seven, but he's some things happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is funny to mention, like, so Seth and, A-Train are walking out, and A-Train thinks it went well, but Seth's like, no, it didn't go well at all. They're not going to do it.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, I think she liked it. And he goes, no, she hated it.
Yeah. And he goes, well, she said it was well thought out. He's like, yeah, that's
AKA she hated it.
She hates it.
Yeah.
And they're not going to go forward with it. And then Seth was straight up honest, like, look, you're not being real. Like, we all can tell that if you did this, all African Americans can tell you're being fake about this. And just trying to be honest with him. And it pisses A-Train off. He's like, well, you have no dick.
Yeah.
And walks away. Because if you remember, he's the one from the...
Yeah, he was in like the support group.
For the superhero boyfriend, girlfriend, anonymous stuff.
Yeah, where his soup girlfriend, didn't she like bite his dick off?
No.
She ripped it off.
It was frozen off.
That's what it was.
Yeah, it got they had sex and it froze it to like negative whatever degrees Celsius.
Yeah.
And it broke off. So yeah, poor Seth. Because also a pretty attractive lady's walking by, right? As A-Train says,
I don't think that. I realized that.
Yeah. So yeah.
Okay.
But anywho, so that's those two side stories. I say, do you want to get into Huey before we jump into the boys?
Yeah, I think that's probably the next best place to start because the boys and everything that happens with them is kind of a good place to end things up.
Yeah. So Huey, he finds out Nadia. Well. What's her name? Newman,
right.
Is actually Nadia, who is the head popper. And he does talk to Starlight about it at home. Starlight's like, well, don't go into work. Don't just say wait for me to come back. And he's kind of like, okay, like I can handle it myself. Like I'm okay. Like I'm a big boy.
Yeah.
And you kind of see like he's starting to shrink back down a little bit here. Whereas before he was okay with her being a superhero and stronger than him and all that. And now he's kind of like losing his cool here. So she, this whole episode, she's off doing birthday stuff for Homelander.
Right.
And he can't wait. He wants to be able to get stuff done on his own. So one, he's pissed off because I think at one point he tries to open that jar of jam again and can't open it. So he breaks it open on the counter, cuts his hand.
Which, like, don't get me wrong, when people have had trouble opening jars, you know, you tap on the jar or you tap it on the counter or whatever. Or I've even seen people where they will go and, like, hit the top of the jar, like, on an edge or on the counter or whatever.
I do a little doot-doot-doot.
Yeah. Homeboy was literally just like, smash.
Yeah, and then a shard of glass cuts his hand. It's pretty bloody.
Yeah. And it's so, like, dude, come on, man.
He's a dumb. But he does figure out what Red River is, which is the place that Tony had brought up to Nadia, which is an adoptions agency. Well,
it's like an adoption agency slash kind of orphanage.
Yeah.
A little bit.
For the super enabled.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all children who are.
Did you notice one of the children?
Oh, yeah. Man. Yeah. Oh, I did.
Yeah.
I did. Which I'm trying to think here, though, like. I guess the time between when season one started and now, we know there's a jump of a year between season two and season three. So, yeah, that kid is got to be
at
that age.
That is who it is, which we'll bring up in a second.
Yeah.
So Huey gets in there, meets with the person, talking about why he wants to adopt.
Yeah, he kind of fakes things. He says that he is an employee at Vought.
Yeah.
And so this lady is like taking him through and
these kids are nuts.
Yeah. The kids are kind of there and it's all these super enabled kids and they're ranging from like I think like 3 or 4 years old to there's like some older ones there, probably like 7 or 8 maybe.
Yeah. But we got kids climbing on the walls, we got one kid who teleports, one kid who's like doing a bunch of other stuff. But the one kid who teleports up and points to the TV, and it's the news of the premiere, and he sees Huey on there with Starlight, and she's like, oh, my God. So she first tells the kid, hey, so-and-so Stillwell, you know you're not supposed to teleport in front of people.
Yeah, so we find out here that is Madeline Stillwell's baby.
I hope he comes into play at some point in the show.
I kind of hope so, but then I'm also thinking to myself, too, so Madeline and her baby were, you know, inseparable in season one, and Homelander was super jealous of him and the relationship he had with his mother. But, you know, he's a baby. It's got to be around his mom. So then when Homelander killed her, you know, it kind of...
Oh, I tell you what. Go ahead.
Well, it kind of sucks because it's like, you know, after Madeline's death, Vought pretty much pinned all of the bad shit that happened with Compound V and the baby experimenting on her after her death.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, then this baby's just kind of out there and,
yeah,
you know, stinks.
So you would think like, oh, of course he was probably experimented on too as well.
Right.
What's funny is we all thought Homelander saved the baby. We didn't think about when that shit exploded, the baby could have teleported yards away, like houses away.
Right.
So it's pretty cool to think about that. Like that's his power. That's why he was so far away from the house.
Yeah, because I think they even mention at one point in like news, one of the news clips that was going on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, I think we even talked about that when that episode happened. It was like, if Homelander saved Billy, who saved the baby?
Right.
And
we kind of like, was it Homelander? Like, could have been, but would he have really done that? But yeah, so anyway, this lady knows that, hey, that you're Starlight's boyfriend. Like, this is kind of weird.
Yeah, she even goes, this is highly irregular.
Yeah.
Which she's being very like.
Who says that?
Yeah, right?
Who says that?
So I think she's like about to like make a phone call or something like that. And Huey's like, no, stop. Just wait. Like, yes, I don't work for Vought. I am Starlight's boyfriend. She sent me here because she didn't want to be like seen out in the public eye. But really, it's her idea to adopt a child.
It's her idea to adopt. Please, I was never here because this is about
We want to keep this low key. We don't want it to be, you know, a big public thing.
Yeah, this is not for fame. This is for love of children or whatever. So they're like, okay, cool. So they go to a computer to go through all the kids they have. It's kind of weird because it's kind of like going to get a puppy or something.
That's exactly what I thought too.
She mentions like the races, like that's in right now. It's like,
yeah, she's like, oh, South Asian or something like that.
Yeah.
So she's going through like profiles of these different kids. And he was just like, oh, do you mind if I just like check it out myself a little bit? And
he scoots up real close to grab the mouse and keeps scooting closer.
Yeah, and the lady's kind of like,
what the heck?
So we see that he's clicking through, but then with his other hand, he goes and like sticks a little USB device in the computer. And so we realize then he's there to just steal some data. Information from there. Yeah. Because we realize that orphanage, adoption agency, whatever, is where Nadia and Tony met. Mm-hmm. So that's why he's there, to try and get some more information, because he's trying to figure out what's going on with Nadia / Victoria, you know, trying to figure out where she came from, what's going on.
Yeah. So he gets the information. He leaves.
Yeah.
And he plugs the USB into his laptop in his car. He does his research, and he finds pictures. One, Nadia killed her parents by blowing their heads out when she was really young.
Yeah.
But then you see a video, and it's her being quote-unquote adopted. And she's like, why am I here? Am I in trouble? Like, no, you're actually getting what you wanted. She's like, I'm getting adopted. And you hear a voice go, well, not quite. It's legal stuff that you don't need to worry about. And it's Mr. Edgar's voice.
Yeah. And so it's interesting to see here then that he brought her out of this adoption agency and essentially raised her, you know, and she's a little bit older at this point. She's probably
preteen. Teen.
Yeah. I would say like between 10 and 12 years old, yeah. Somewhere around there. But now you kind of start to see a little bit more of like, okay, well, she's a soup. Things are happening because, you know, there's always a reason why stuff's happening. And when the trial for against Vought was happening and that head popper was there, one of the big things was, okay, well, we're still trying to get soups in the military. There are soup terrorists and whatever. And the head popper pretty much moved forward the agenda of like, okay, well, we need the soups then. Hmm. We're taking the heat off of Vought because we need them.
Yep.
And now we know kind of why and how that all came together.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he was shocked to say the least.
Yeah.
Because now he understands not only is his boss a soup, not only is she the head popper, but essentially he's been working for Vought this whole time.
Exactly.
In a way.
You're exactly right. He has been. And so he goes through this situation, but he realizes he has to get to work at some point. So he's back at the office, and right as he goes in there, Newman is like, who's Nadia?
Yeah.
And he's like, what?
And she's like, yeah, security said that there was a guy here yesterday saying that he was asking for Nadia and thinking it was me. And you told him that, you know.
Yeah. Why
whatever.
You
he's like, were you going to mention that to me? And he's like, oh, well, you know, I just thought he was kind of just a strung out guy or
guy
whatever.
Who lost a couple. You know, he's not all there.
Right.
By the way, you can see a big difference in Huey from season one to here. Like, his lie pops up confidently. There's no stuttering.
Right.
Nothing. He's right. Straight up like, oh, yeah, this guy came in. It didn't seem important. Like,
now, in this moment, when I'm watching it, I'm thinking like, okay, does she know that he knows?
I think she's trying to figure out if he knows, because after this guy comes in, she also mentions like, you haven't been around. What's going on?
Right.
Because he took probably a day or two off. After this guy comes in and calls her Nadia, he's not around. So she's kind of putting the pieces together like, did he figure something out?
Right.
And luckily enough,
yeah, she keeps pressing Huey.
She even presses about the cut on his hand.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, I cut myself, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But then luckily he gets saved.
By none other than Starlight popping in. Oh, he was with me. We were having some conversations pretty loudly. And they kind of almost argue in front of Nadia.
Yeah. Not going to lie, when she said we were having conversations pretty loudly.
You thought sex?
Oh, my gosh. I totally thought she meant they were having sex. Yeah. But yeah, she's like saying, oh, yeah, you know, we got into a fight and whatever, blah, blah. They start bickering there even. And then Nadia's just kind of just like, you know what? This is none of my business. I'm out of here.
Yeah. And as she's walking away, it is important to note, she turns around and says, hey, Huey, give her some slack. It's okay to be in love like with a powerful woman.
Right.
So they go back to the car. They do have
a little bit of a spat. Yeah.
Yeah. But nothing crazy. And then he shows her everything that he found at Red River. The funny part here is at the end, he goes, oh, by the way, we might have adopted a child. And she just looks at him, and then it cuts away from the scene. But, yeah, they're trying to figure out what to do now in this situation.
Yeah.
And she even says, should we talk to Butcher? And he's like, no, I wouldn't hear the end of it if he knew I was working with the head popper this whole time.
Yeah. So yeah, Huey is kind of, his world's falling apart now too, because he thought he was out, kind of finds out he's even deeper in than he ever was before. Maybe not on the side of like, hey, my life is being threatened every day and I'm on the run and I'm a fugitive or whatever. But he's in a very different way now.
Yeah, but his head could pop any day.
That too.
Yeah, so Huey's trying to figure out what he needs to do now. Now we go over to the boys.
Yeah, so where do you want to go with here? Because I do want to talk about MM briefly. Because he's, you know, just got a little part here, and we could kind of just talk
Let's
about that.
Let's hit MM real quick, and then we'll jump over.
So MM, as we saw in the first episode, he is back in his daughter's life, and he is no longer with Monique. Monique is with her new boyfriend.
Tool.
Yeah. And so there's one point where he's obviously splitting time with Monique. With his daughter. She has him sometimes, he has her sometimes. And MM is living in, you know, in an apartment by himself, but he has his daughter with him. And we had mentioned in the first episode how MM is kind of not himself. Monique even actually asks him one time, you know, are you taking your Lexapro? So he's trying to deal with his anxiety. He's always been an OCD, you know, type person, whatever, but everything that's happening in his life, he always, as crazy as the outside world was, he always still had things in order. And that was his way of like coping with things, is to have that OCD, to have that, order and everything. And he doesn't really have that anymore.
No. And you actually see it a few times this episode, right? So one, that he loses his cool, but one is he does have like still some of like the want to do what the boys do, because in his closet, he's got all these news articles. This one's definitely about like Soldier Boy.
Yeah.
And we'll find out in a little bit that Soldier Boy plays a part in his dad's death.
Right.
So Billy shows up to the apartment to talk to MM.
Yeah.
And is like kind of saying like, hey, we've got some stuff about Soldier Boy, that if he was killed by this, we could kill Homelander. And kind of giving the big spiel. But
yeah, he's essentially trying to reel him back in again.
Yeah. And MM doesn't really take it like he did in the first season. Like, he's kind of like, nah, man, he even like curses out Billy in front of his daughter, and he apologizes because he doesn't like losing his cool in front of his daughter.
Right.
It turns into this conversation. He does say, hey, well, I do have something. So he gives him some of the information that he does have.
Right.
And Billy, you know, whatever, leaves. But then later, he's thinking about it. You know, he still wants to maybe figure this all out, and he has all his papers in front of him, and then his daughter yells, smells like fire. And a fire alarm goes off.
Yeah, there's something on the stovetop that was like burning or whatever.
Yeah.
So the smoke alarm's going off and it's just beeping, beeping, beeping. And if you've ever been somebody that's been around a smoke alarm that's going off when there's not really a fire happening.
And there's children around.
Yeah, it's annoying. And it's like, you know, your kid's freaking out. Your smoke alarm's going off. You're freaking out. Yeah. You're just doing whatever you can to try and like stop it. And most people, they'll either like blow the smoke away or whatever, or like
there's a button you can
can hold the button to have it go off or whatever. He even tries that. He like gets a broomstick and he's trying to like hit the button to have the smoke alarm go off, not working. So then he like is whacking it. It falls on the ground. Then he starts smashing the smoke alarm
with his hands and picks it up and smashing the ground and like cursing at it.
Yeah, and he's realizing, okay, like I just lost my cool with my daughter.
MM's usually under control. Like even when he's slamming this thing, he doesn't look under control. It looks like MM to me.
Not at all. Not at all.
And then he apologizes to his daughter.
I think he even tries to go kind of maybe like give her a hug. She pulls away at first.
But then she goes back in, which is super sweet, right?
Yeah.
And you do feel really bad for MM here because things just aren't right for him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we had mentioned several times in past episodes, MM is as over the top and as crazy as things are with Frenchie and Billy and Huey and everybody else. MM is one of the more relatable, more grounded, more down-to-earth characters.
Yeah.
And I think this even proves it more so.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a parent, you have kids, that you know how stressful raising children can be at times.
Oh, yeah.
And just the relationships and the dynamics you have with family. So for somebody like myself and, you know, obviously you as well, you kind of relate to MM in this situation.
Yep.
But anyway, yeah, so he loses his cool. And I do want to mention, before the smoke alarm had gone off, you know, he had given Billy the one file, says, I might have something.
Yeah.
When really MM has like tons of stuff. He's got boxes and boxes of files, paperwork, all this, whatever. And as he's looking through some of the stuff, he starts laying out the pieces of information, the papers that he's got.
Yep.
And of course, in true MM fashion, everything is perfectly spaced, laid out, you know, whatever. And there's even one part where he notices there's one paper that's like just slightly tilted, and he goes and fixes it. And he's just looking through all the information here. And that's when, you know, the fire or the smoke alarm starts going off. And again, it's like he's using his OCD as a way to cope with his anxiety and everything else. And I think, you know, and we've come to find out it's the case, but really when he is with the boys, his life is outside of himself and his family is all chaos, but his life is in order.
Yeah.
Now that he doesn't have the boys, everything outside of his life is in order, but his life is chaos now.
Yeah, exactly. And we do see he does, bring his daughter back home to Monique. And there is the OCD thing. He taps the doorbell 3 times. And
right, before he rings it.
And then he talks to Monique, and he's like, hey, can I talk to you real quick? And he kind of goes over everything with her, and he's like, I don't think I should go back to Butcher and the boys, but I really, this thing about Soldier Boy just eats at me. And even Monique goes, then go back to Butcher.
Yeah.
She's like, I know I can't be with you, and I'm sorry for that. She goes, but there's some kind of closure you need here, so go back to Butcher. And he's like, don't tell our daughter about this at all. Like, I don't want her to know anything about Soldier Boy, any of this, right. Blah, blah, blah. And she just goes, she'll be here when you get back. So it's a different dynamic from season 1 and 2 where she was always pissed off at him about this stuff.
Yeah.
She's starting to understand. And she's even like, I'm not, when you get done, your daughter will still be here for you. You know?
You know, there's one thing that we forgot to mention. It's very, very small, but I thought it was funny and a nice callback.
Talk to me.
In the previous episode, when he's at his daughter's birthday party, he asks Monique to meet up at one point to go over some co-parenting issues. And he says, we'll go to this restaurant. We'll order the tilapia.
Yeah, the tilapia, yeah.
And if you recall, the first time we meet MM, he's making dinner plans with Monique.
To make tilapia. Oh, he's going to pick up the tilapia or something.
Yeah, well, he says, I'll go to this restaurant and I'll pick up some tilapia.
Yeah.
So that was a nice little call.
And it's where they had their first date. So she's like, we're going to talk about co-parenting where we had our first date. Come on.
Yeah. But in any case, yeah, he's, I think at this point he kind of is a bit relieved because one of the reasons why he was trying so hard to stay away from Billy and the boys in general and that lifestyle is because he realizes that, you know, he's already lost Monique. He doesn't want to lose his daughter. And really the only thing that would be keeping his daughter away from Monique. Is Monique.
Yeah.
And now the fact that she's kind of, in a way, like, given her blessing for him to go do what he needs to do, he's kind of relieved a bit here.
Yeah.
And you know, we don't really get any more of MM in this episode, but I'm excited to kind of have him be back to being his own person, and hopefully he gets back with the boys and we get the old MM back.
Yeah. I'm excited for it. MM's great. So yeah there's that. Some really good scenes in this season with MM. But yeah, so let's jump over to the boys are they're splitting up. They're going to go find some members of Payback to get some more information on Soldier Boy.
Yeah. So
Frenchie
let's
and Kimiko.
I was gonna say, let's go Frenchie and Kimiko. They go to
Vaultland.
Yeah, which is their like amusement park.
Yeah.
And this is the thing. Obviously you can't have something this I don't want to say insignificant or whatever, but you can't have something like in a show like this be a huge, huge part. But like when they go into Vaultland, I sure was getting like Dutch Wonderland vibes. Like it was not like a Disneyland type place to me.
No, it wasn't like the hugest thing. Like they just kind of did whatever to get people in to make money, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't like best. But here's what I want to again kind of relate to real world stuff where it's like they're not really trying to be good people, but they're just pretending to make money. So like they have BLM BLTs. They had woke walks. They had something LGBTQ as well.
Yeah. They had like some themes like sandwich with Maeve or something.
Yeah.
I think they even had like a Maeve taco stand or something.
Yeah. And it's like you guys really aren't trying. You know what I mean? You're just doing it just to make it look like you care.
Yeah. But like you think Vaultland, you're equating it to like Disneyland, Disney World. And when they go there, I was looking, I'm like, this is more like a, I don't know, like if you're local to the area where we live, like there's a place called Dutch Wonderland.
It's mainly for kids.
Yeah. It's mainly for children. And it's not the worst amusement park in the world.
I'm going there, so. If you compare it to Hershey Park or Disneyland, yeah, it's, you know, nothing or even like that.
Yeah, it's nowhere near the scale of that. So yeah. this Vaultland place is basically, you know what it is? It's like a couple steps up above like a local carnival / festival in my eyes when I was looking at it.
Yeah, it didn't seem like it was that great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't like grand. Like when you walk into Disneyland or Disney World, you're like eyes open, things are nuts.
Right, right.
Yeah, Vaultland is just, again, they're just there to make money, so they're probably not spending much on things. But
anywho, they're going there for a specific reason because there's one of the members of Payback who works there as a performer.
Yeah. So I really want to, before we get into that, because it is important to Kemiko's story, she sees two kids eating together, and it makes her think of her and her brother. She wants to get on a roller coaster there because her and her brother always wanted to get on that roller coaster when they were kids. Frenchie notices this, and he like sweetly says, "We have something to do, but when we're done, we can go do that."
Right.
So that'll come to play a little bit later. But yeah, so they go find, it's the Crimson Crusader. Is it Crusader? No. Crimson. Give me a second.
I don't have it.
You got a phone on you. Either way, it's Crimson something. And she puts on a show actually about Soldier Boy. And she actually sings a song about Soldier Boy and kind of tells his life story. And, you know, same story. He dies in Ohio to stop a nuclear meltdown. They say
Crimson Countess.
Countess. There we go. I almost had it.
Yeah.
And Crimson Countess is singing this song about how he's, you know, an American boy. Luckily, we don't get the whole freaking song because at first I thought we were going to hear the whole thing. And she has a power when she touches her hand. I guess she makes like light or fire or like just beams of.
Yeah, it's like a fireball type thing.
And she puts a little glowy into the stand.
Yeah.
And
it's just all part of the show.
But Kimiko's loving it, by the way.
Yeah.
So the show ends and you can actually pay for extras. Time to go meet Crimson Countess.
Yeah, it's like a tea time thing with the Countess or whatever.
Which usually is for little kids, but Frenchie and Kimiko come in. She's like, you guys are a little too old for this. And he's like, we're young at heart.
Yeah. Now, mind you, before they come in there, she's also railing lines of coke.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody does coke in the boys.
I guess. But yeah, so they're there and Kimiko like says to her like, "Oh, I really like your music," and she's like, "Oh, you can't talk," and or she shows her on her phone. Yeah. She says, "I really like your music," and she's like, "Oh, you can't talk." She's like, "Do you want to hear something new?" So Crimson Countess starts getting on her laptop and showing like a music video for a new song that she's working on. And
chimps don't cry.
Yeah, yeah.
And she goes, you know, they actually can't cry.
Yeah, it's physically not possible for them. And this song is just as bad as the one she did for Soldier Boy.
Terrible.
But as she's distracted and Kimiko and her are watching that, then Frenchie's over, like, kind of looking through stuff and trying to find things or whatever. But not really getting it.
Yeah, but he pretty much tells Kimiko, like, hey, let's hurry this up. So Kimiko grabs Crimson Countess's hands, because if they touch, that's how they can create the fire or the laser or whatever. Grabs and puts it behind her back, and they ask, we don't know about Soldier Boy, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, everything here is the truth. Like, just get the hell off me. And like, she's like cursing them out and everything. And right as this is happening, like, another kid opens the door to come in for tea time. Crimson Countess gets away. And she runs out, and they start chasing her. And she has spent time now to do her little like hand thingy, and she shoots a beam at Kimiko and Frenchie, but they dodge it and it hits the mascot.
Yeah, there's a guy in like a Homelander mascot suit, very similar to like a Mickey Mouse or like a Goofy thing at Disney. It's like this huge, big, cartoony,
big old Homelander head.
Yeah, but yeah, gets hit with this fireball,
blows up.
Yeah, and blood and guts all over the kids around him. Everyone's screaming, freaking out.
The two kids that Kimiko saw, and she starts getting sad seeing like that because later on, and I'll just mention it real quick. She's like talking about her childhood. She says she ruined their childhood now too. It was all her fault. But yeah, so Crimson Countess does that, and she sees that she blew somebody up, and she runs away.
Yeah,
gets away. That's basically Frenchie and Kimiko's adventure.
Pretty much.
Yeah, we go to Billy Butcher, who goes to a gun show. Which, by the way, is like $8 for adults, kids get in free.
Yeah.
And this place is a freaking mess. Like, you come in and, like, the kids are drawing stuff for guns. They have a little kid area. One of them has a sniper and is aiming it. And it's wild.
Yeah. And it very much shows, like, the stereotypical side of what you would see in a gun show being covered by the news. And let me just say this. Like, I'm not necessarily anti or pro gun. Like, I don't have any guns there. If you have guns, cool. As long as you're being safe about it, fine. And even around, like, children, I think kids should learn about gun safety. But this is, like, you know,
we don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is like, oh, this is an extreme, you know, it's a TV show, but extreme version of a gun show, right? Where it's like, yeah, we don't care. Kids, go play with those guns over there.
Right.
Which I'm sure people wouldn't do. But we do get to Gunpowder, which was the right hand man of Soldier Boy.
Yeah, he was another member of Payback who was a very young kid.
Yeah.
In Payback, whereas most of the other soups were adults. Yeah, you know, or young adults at least anyway.
Yeah, and so he's going on and he has a little speech that he has in a room somewhere, and it's basically like, "Hey, if Bobby Sanger gets elected, we're going to turn to a communist country type of deal."
Yeah, very much like Obama / Biden's gonna take our guns type speech.
Yes, you know, very much.
And typically something that you would see used to rally hyper conservative, you know, Second Amendment bear arms type people.
Yeah. So he's going off about this, but then he says, "Thank you very much." And he's like, 50% off hollow points, don't forget. It's just great. But so he's going to the bathroom and Butcher decides to settle up in the stall in the urinal right next to him.
Yeah, does not follow the 1-3-5-2-4-6 rule at
he
all.
He does not. And he starts saying he's a big fan. He makes a joke, "I shake your hand," but you know.
Yeah, and he's like, "Oh, well, thanks, I guess."
Yeah. So as Gunpowder's washing his hands, Billy starts kind of going off like, "Oh, it must have been kind of cool being Soldier Boy's right-hand man, you know, getting a little rub and tug for him every now and then, deep-throating," and he's just like, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we don't really get any backstory, but we find out here that after everything happened with Payback, that there was a big rumor that Soldier Boy molested Gunpowder.
Yeah.
And Gunpowder's basically saying, like, "Hey, like,
that ain't true.
That's not true. I don't know what you're talking about."
Billy says he has a thing from Vault saying, you know, you put in a complaint about him, blah, blah, blah. If you don't speak to me, this will go out. Finally, this doesn't work.
Yeah.
But I was like, well, it doesn't matter if you put that out. It's not true. I don't care, man. So he walks away. Billy follows him to the
parking lot.
And a gunfight breaks out here because, well, he actually doesn't follow him. He actually gets in his car and gets shot at by Gunpowder.
That's right. That's what it was. Billy is in his car. He notices some action happening behind him and realizes there's a gun pointing at him.
Ducks.
Yeah, he ducks, gets out of the car. They go into like a little gunfight. And I think Gunpowder is you know, his whole thing is he's like an expert gun shooter.
Yeah.
He's a marksman.
Because even at one point, he looks into one of those like parking lot mirrors.
Yeah.
And he lines up a shot that goes through a car, hits a pillar, and bounces off another pillar.
Yeah, bounces off a pipe and then goes and like grazes Billy's cheek.
Kills Billy.
Yeah.
And Billy, at this point, he's already been shot in the leg.
Yeah.
So Billy's just not going through it very well here.
Yeah.
And so he starts shooting a bunch of cars so the alarms go off so he can get away, which he does. So this is a moment, right? So that after he gets away and he's healing himself up.
He's bandaging himself with his leg and, you know, he's bleeding through.
He's down in the dumps.
Yeah.
And so what's crazy here is so he calls Huey. And he starts to tell Huey, maybe you're right. Like, maybe we need to go things about it the right way. But what's funny is Huey now no longer feels that way because he's realized, like, what he's going through, the right way didn't work.
Yeah.
He's like, no matter what, Vaught has the upper hand.
Yeah, and he spills here. Then he says, Newman is the head popper. You know, I thought that I could go here and make a difference, but really I can't. And, you know, we kind of have to go back and fight Vaught another way. We have to fight them your way.
Yep. And that kind of reinvigorates Billy a little bit. He's like, the boys are getting back together. I also find it sweet that he called Huey.
Yeah, well, because
Huey is his
His canary.
Yeah.
And, you know, the whole role reversal with them in the first episode where Billy's reporting to Huey and kind of taking orders from Huey, you know, that did not make Billy feel good, obviously.
Yeah, and I wonder, I can't remember quite the dynamic this season, because obviously they get back together, but I can't remember if it's like, does Huey just go back down a peg and like let him lead, or are they like together equals now? So this will be a fun dynamic to
yeah,
see.
Yeah, I'm interested in that too, because, you know, Huey has already proven time and time again that he is more valuable than he seems on the surface. Like,
yeah, he's
yes,
he's capable.
Not, you know, a fighter. Yes, he's not like someone who is a master strategist or whatever, but he finds ways to make things happen that, at least to the boys anyway, are unconventional.
Yeah. And he doesn't quit. You know, I mean, he
right.
almost did, but he doesn't.
Right.
Even...
And then on top of that, he is there to kind of balance Billy out
100%.
A little bit.
So this reinvigorates Billy, and
he decides to go have another little visit with
yeah.
Gunpowder.
Yeah.
Gunpowder is still at this, you know, convention, this gun show, whatever. I think it's probably like a weekend, multi-day event.
Yeah, so Billy's leaning on...
Yeah, he's going back
car.
To his car, and he's like, hey, like, get the fuck off my car. And then he realizes, okay, it's Billy again.
He's like, you again, huh?
Yeah. And so, yeah, quickly just whips out his gun.
Like my
gun shoots shots? Him. It was great. It was great.
Yeah.
And shoots him 3 times in the chest. Billy slumps over.
And Gunpowder just laughs like, oh, okay, I guess
yeah.
that's it.
Yeah. And now, mind you, I didn't think Billy was dead here, but I also was like, well, he's probably not dead. They're not just going to let him go out like this to a no-name character.
Yeah.
But what's going to happen here? So then, as Gunpowder starts to like walk up, he takes a step, and Billy starts to move again. And he gets up, and you look, and he opens up his shirt, and the bullets are kind of just stuck to his chest, a la like Superman style.
Yeah.
And he wipes the bullets off, and he's not hurt.
And he just has his little Billy smirk. And the other, and Gunpowder's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he starts pretty much, he breaks Gunpowder's guns, starts beating the shit out of him, trying to get information about Soldier Boy. He does. He says, it wasn't the nuclear thing that killed him. I think he says it was in Vietnam that it happened.
I don't remember exactly.
It was somewhere overseas,
right?
That it happened, and Billy wants more information, and so he starts beating on him again. He's like, "That's all I know. It's all I know. I gave you all I know." Blah blah blah. And he's like, "Yeah, you did, but it still doesn't change who and what you are." And he starts beating the shit out of this guy.
Yeah, repeatedly punching him in the face.
Basically. Yeah, and he's releasing that all on this guy.
Right.
And,
right.
But yeah, he gets so mad that he creates laser beams out of his eyes.
Yeah, well, and you see at one point, like, he's punching the shit out of Gunpowder, and then his eyes start to glow, but he doesn't laser beam him right away. Billy, like, closes his eyes.
It hurts.
Right, but then he realizes, like, okay, like, I can't. Opens his eyes, like, slices through Gunpowder and his car, and then just starts looking all around, his laser beams going out, and he can't control it.
Yeah.
So then finally he like calms down, his laser vision goes away, he looks, and then Gunpowder kind of just, you see his face and
fly
his
right
head
off.
Like sliding off his body, and then his car is like cut in half.
The same thing, yeah.
Yeah.
So this kind of goes back to when Billy and Homelander met. It's like, we're kind of, they're the same.
Yeah, and you know, I'm wondering how, I'm assuming Billy's going to have a really hard time struggling with this because
he hates soups.
Yeah. And now, even though it's just temporary, he's a soup.
Yep.
So I'm thinking there's going to be some really interesting dynamics here. I'm wondering too, what's he going to tell the boys? Cause nobody knows he has the V-24 except Maeve.
Only Maeve. Yep.
So it's like, what's he going to tell the boys when he finds out things, and they're going to say, oh, well, how did things go with Gunpowder?
Yeah. You well, know? You know what the other important thing here is? They talk about it was dealing with a like CIA or FBI over in Vietnam, and he's like, the only thing I can tell you, the leader of the group was Grace Mallory.
Right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, me too. So yeah, there's some real things moving here this season already.
Yeah. And actually, you know what? One thing we kind of forgot to touch on with the last episode, Ryan, Becca's son,
yeah,
is being, you
pretty
know,
living with Grace Mallory.
Yeah, she's at some secure facility or compound or whatever, and Billy goes to visit her or visit him,
Ryan, once in a while.
You know, yeah.
Even in the first episode, I remember they're leaving. Grace, like, you can just live here, and Billy says, "Last time I banged a blue hair, I was a lot younger."
Yeah,
which I thought was hilarious. Yeah. So yeah, Grace Mallory is hanging out with Ryan and taking care of Ryan, and even in this episode, like, there's really Ryan sends a movie that Billy watches, and it's stop motion Legos like he does, and it's a phone call from Becca, and it kind of really hits
Billy
pretty hard. But yeah, so Ryan's still in play here. It's not like he's out of the show. It's just, man, we only have like an hour or so to do this podcast, and we could talk probably 30, 40 minutes on that too as well.
Right,
so,
right.
But Ryan's still at play. Grace Mallory is still around.
And now Billy's kind of maybe having some reason to suspect Grace Mallory of some foul play.
Yeah, or at least not giving information.
Right, right.
Yep.
But that's the end of this episode. Again, this show just unfolds, and every episode you're getting something new, you're getting something awesome. And
kind of like me, you know?
Yeah.
No? Oh, okay. You're getting something the same with me, but still pretty awesome.
I'll give you that. I'll give you that. But anyway, yeah, I'm very excited to see where the rest of the season goes. And pretty soon we're going to be at a point where we're all caught up, and I'm excited for that too.
Yeah, excited and sad.
True, true. Because then after season four is done, and even though it's not going to be for, you know, a couple of months here, a few months from now.
What's next?
Then we're having to wait. I don't know how long the Boys comics go, and I don't know like where we are in the show versus where we are in the comics, but clearly there's some sort of end, unless the Boys comics are still going on. Let us know if you read the comics. Are they still being made right now? Who knows?
You do.
Let us know.
Yeah.
But otherwise, yeah, we will catch you guys on the next episode. Listen in here for more stuff on the Boys, and we'll talk to you soon. Peace.
Peace.